Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, November 27, 2024, which is the day before Thanksgiving, my very last day on the planet as a 60-year-old person. 91.7 FM, WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza, who just came back from Chicago. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so today, the first broadcast of this will be on Wednesday, November 27th. So you may be listening to this while you're starting to make your Thanksgiving preparations. So I sort of set this up to be kind of a Thanksgiving preparation, your companion to your Thanksgiving preparation. So perhaps you're preparing your turkey, or you're making stuffing, or you're making a dessert, or you're making a side dish. So we thought we'd talk about some Thanksgiving-oriented stuff. Before I do that, I just wanted to mention dry. So two things to think about, even though it's autumn. We are in a drought in Connecticut. I don't know if we're in moderate or severe at this point, but the fire danger in Connecticut keeps going from red flag to moderate. And I think today we're not at red flag. We had a little tiny bit of rain last night, thank goodness, but not enough to write home about. What is it we need, Ron?
A good soca.
Right. We need a good soca. And soca spelled S-O-A-K-A. Right. So be careful. Not a good idea to have a pit fire. I think there's places where you're not even supposed to burn stuff outside at all. You're not supposed to have barbecues.
You're not even supposed to use your gas grills. Anything.
Not supposed to use your gas grills. Nothing outside.
Yeah, it's
right.
Really
so don't
nuts.
Burn anything outside. It's dangerous. We even had a brush fire in North Windham, which is shouting distance from our house. Ron and I, last Saturday, we went on a hike. We got our 5K in. We walked over to North Windham to see if the fire was there, and there was still smoke and people were working on it. So that was unnerving. And then we came round and walked back on the road because I had a time issue. Yeah. Was that last week or is that 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I was gone last weekend.
Right. Yes.
Just so you know, western parts of the state are under severe drought conditions.
Right.
And the rest of the state has experienced moderate drought conditions.
Yes.
But still, everything's very crispy out there.
Very crispy.
And lots of leaves on the ground.
Yeah, so lots crispy, of leaves on the ground still.
Crispy leaves and sparks don't go together.
No, they do not. It's all true. So be very careful about that. The next thing about dry is if you're watching one of the video feeds, which would basically be Facebook Live, I don't know if you could tell this. I put some stuff in my hair, but my hair is dry right now because it's almost Arizona dry. So you'll find that you may be dry. And one of the things is it's not that warm out, so you might not be thirsty. So guess what you might be letting up on? And I just talked to Ron about this. He's having some problems with his health in terms of cramping and stuff. And if you have cramping problems anyway, watch out. You may need more hydration, and you may not be hydrating as much as you usually do because you're not feeling it. And I've had a couple of patients come in. I don't like water, and I'm like, oh, don't like water. So here's my water. I do like water. As long as it's good water, and the water from our well is wonderful. It has just the right balance of minerals, and we're doing very well. By the way, what's the chances that our well will run dry? Is there a chance?
Not.
Why?
Because we live, we have a really solid reservoir underneath us, and I've lived here for how many years now? 30 years?
Yeah. Wow.
And we're darn close to it, and the well's never gone dry or been in any danger of going dry.
They've been interviewing people on the news, and there have been people whose wells have gone dry.
Yeah, well, if they're up around stores, it could happen.
Oh. What stores?
University of Connecticut.
Oh, so you mean a lot of water usage.
Too many showers. And they're drawing water from the Schnipset Reservoir, but they're still, I think, drawing some water out of the Fenton River.
Yeah.
And the Fenton Reservoir and the Willimantic River Reservoir. And, I see. There's big reservoirs of water down below us.
So we're more...
like hundreds of feet below us.
Oh, okay. Like aquifers.
Aquifers. Yeah. Right. And that's what we have. We have a 200-foot well.
Right. So we're good. Thank goodness.
So far.
So I can take a shower.
You can take a shower.
I'm going to take long showers.
God, you better.
Okay, thank you. I smell pretty good now. I just looked at my stock of body washes, and I'm like overstocked. So I don't need any body wash. I mean, if one wound up in my stocking, it wouldn't be the end of the world. I'd use it eventually, but you know. Anyway, so if you look at my hair is a little frizzy. My hair is prone to frizz anyway because of my age and just my genetics. So I'm, you know, putting more product in my hair to make it calm down. But, you know, it's just a barometer of the dryness in the air. And what's more important than the dryness in the air is the dryness in you. If you're finding that you're, so one of the things you do is you may see this now, again, if you're watching me on a video, you can see that I am pinching, I'm using my fingers to pinch the skin on the top of my hand. If you pinch it and it bounces back very quickly, you're in good shape hydration-wise. But if it takes a little bit of time to do that, drink more, please. So if you have trouble drinking because you're like, I don't like water, studies show that people will tend to drink water more if they can taste something in it, particularly carbohydrate. And it doesn't have to be actual carbohydrate. It can just be a flavoring that kind of tastes like carbohydrate. So my preference, not that, and I do like water, unless it's water that happens to taste bad because it's city water or there's mold in it or something. But if it's good water, I like plain water, although I tend not to pound it as much if it doesn't taste like something. It's not because of a taste thing. It's just because I take a sip and then I put it down. But if there's something, if I can taste something in it, I'm more inclined to drink it more. Now, if I'm very thirsty, I will intend to drink more. So if I'm, you know, working out very hard and I'm sweaty, I'll go ahead and drink more. And that is a way to get yourself more hydrated. Get some exercise and then you'll be more thirsty. Although I went with friends on a wonderful bike ride on Saturday, which I can tell you about. During that ride, we rode 36 miles and it was a super easy ride. We did this great ride where I had the pleasure of my first crossing of the Putnam Bridge. So it was really, I really appreciate my friend Dave created a nice route from South Windsor. We went from the Birdhouse Cafe and he created a nice route where we went to the Putnam Bridge. So I got to go across the Putnam Bridge, which is really cool. And then we went into Old Weathersfield and we toured Old Weathersfield. He showed me different neighborhoods. There's a nice cove in Old Weathersfield. And we stopped at a duck pond there. And we stopped at the Silas Robbins Bed and Breakfast, which is this gorgeous old, I mean, that's worth going to Old Weathersfield for. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's a bed and breakfast. So beautiful. And there's Christmas decorations in front of it already. So I took some pictures of that. And then I went to the Comstock Ferry Heirloom Market. And that was great. You know, Comstock Ferry is a seed company, right? You know that?
No.
Comstock Ferry is a seed company. So when you go into the heirloom, well, you went to the heirloom market with Billy, didn't you?
I don't know, maybe.
You went there on the day that they opened the Putnam Bridge. Didn't you ride into Weathersfield and go have coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah, but you went to Comstock Ferry, didn't you?
I don't know that we did.
Oh, I thought maybe you did. We have to go look at the photo and see if where you actually were. Anyway, the Comstock Ferry is a seed company, and you go into this market, and it's basically a little market and a coffee house, and it's really cool. It's this old building that they've really dressed up, and there's a great cafe there. There are gluten-free goodies and not gluten-free goodies, and then there's other stuff you can buy, like, you know, gourmet chocolate and gourmet popcorn, 10 different brands of local honey and hot sauce, and then there's a whole section that's all seeds. So that was interesting. And the other thing is there's different places to sit. So you can sit out front and have your coffee and your tree. They also make lunch for you. They have lunch food there too. And people were doing that as well. And there's also a greenhouse that's another place to sit. It's not being used as a greenhouse, but it's a greenhouse because It's a seed company. So I went in there and it was super warm in there. And I went up to a guy who was enjoying an actual paper newspaper, had a great conversation with him. His name was Gary Voice. Hi, Gary. So I'm going to tag Gary on my show because I had a lovely conversation with this gentleman. And we had a chat about the greenhouse. And he said, I asked him if it was always this warm in here. He said, no, this is a greenhouse. Look at the handle. They can open up the windows. So when they open the windows, it's cooler in here. But it's set up really nicely. It's beautiful wood all around the walls. And there's a wooden bench that had some very colorful pillows. And we took a picture of me chilling out on the pillows. And I took pictures of the pillows too. But there were lots of tables when people were sitting in there as well. So it's just this really cool place you can go. And just so you know, Comstock Ferry, when I was watching a Hallmark movie, and it was probably Christmas on Honeysuckle Lane, but I didn't remember that. But I was watching this movie and they were outside somewhere. And I said, that looks kind of familiar. So I looked it up and found out that, in fact, the movie had scenes filmed in Old Wethersfield and Comstock Ferry was in it. And so just so you know, if this interests you at all, there is a map, a Connecticut map of filming scenes of Hallmark movies. So Old Wethersfield is one of them. So this movie, Christmas on Honeysuckle Lane, had some scenes filmed in front of the Comstock Ferry and Heirloom Market. And I believe also the Silas Robbins house was in it as well. It should have been because it's just gorgeous. And other places, the Crismark Castle was in one of the... there's this trope in Hallmark movies of an American woman meets a prince from a fictional country and falls in love with him and then winds up going with the fictional prince to his country and winds up becoming the princess and eventually the queen. Anyway, so there's several Hallmark movies that have that as a theme. Well, one of them was filmed in good old Woodstock, Connecticut, where the Crismark Castle is. And their castle, which was supposed to be on some island off of Great Britain, was actually the Crismark Castle. And I think the bed and breakfast that the family ran was an inn in Woodstock as well, because Woodstock is quaint and cute and stuff. Mm. And there's lots of places in Connecticut. In fact, you can get a map and go to the different places that were filmed, that had Hallmark movies filmed in front of them. There is a bunch that were filmed in Stonington, including Noah's Restaurant. There's several that had filming in Stonington and Mystic, two or three at least, and a bunch more. Anyway, so I thought that was kind of interesting. Okay, getting back to hydration. We were on this 36-mile bike ride, which wound up being very easy because we didn't go fast at all. And I noticed that I wasn't drinking a lot on the ride. I had some coffee when I got to Comstock Ferry, but I didn't get through my water bottle very far, which isn't a great thing, which means I feel like I'm down a quart. So that's not a good thing to do. I mean, I do put electrolytes in the water bottle, and I had over-electrolyted it, so it was too strong. And it tastes too sweet and icky. Anyway, you have to find what kind of electrolyte experience you like. And you can have an electrolyte experience where you have no flavor at all, where it's just basically glorified seawater, has trace minerals in it, and some salt and magnesium and potassium. And you can get that. And the nice thing about getting drops like that, there are drops you can get and they have no flavor at all, except your water will taste a little bit salty. And if you don't care for that salty taste, then you go ahead and flavor it yourself. Then you can put fruit in, you can put a splash of fruit juice in, and that's a great way to get your water in. And the neat thing about getting unflavored electrolytes is you can do whatever else you want to the water, or if you develop a taste for that slight saltiness, you could just drink it like that. It's not my favorite way to go. I do like a little bit of flavoring, and I found a brand of electrolytes that's really mellow, and it's not overpoweringly sweet, and it's not overpoweringly tart. It's just right. It's in the Goldilocks zone, so big shout out to my naturopath, Marissa Hauser, for turning me on to these electrolytes, and they come in flavors, and I'm not supposed to tell you the brand. So anyway, so I'm drinking water with electrolytes. I always have it around. Most of my water now has electrolytes in it, because my concern was, when I take lisinopril, which is the blood pressure Metamon, one of the ways it works is it makes you release water and sodium, which can make you a little lightheaded. So Marissa said, okay, so you need electrolyte water, so you get your water back on. And I don't know if that counteracts the effects of the blood pressure med, but that's not the only way it works. It also relaxes your blood vessels so that you have a lower blood pressure. So love my electrolyte water so far. I've had the raspberry and the watermelon, both great. And I will probably try grape next. There's a couple more flavors. You have to be careful because, you know, if you buy a container, you're in for a good month or more of that flavor. And so far, so good. I'm very pleased. So anyway, make sure you drink. It's really a good idea to keep drinking, keep water on hand, keep hydrating yourself, even if you think you're not thirsty. And it does count to drink coffee or tea or a protein shake. Those all count as part of your hydration. What doesn't count is alcohol. So here you are, you're probably, you know, if you're making a dish now and on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, maybe you're having a glass of wine. And have at it, unless you have a problem with alcohol. But gee, have at it, because it's nice. That sounds like a good idea. Have a nice glass of wine while I'm making a dish for Thanksgiving.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. Right. So if you're going to do that, guess this is what you do. You have the wine, and right next to it, you have the electrolyte water. So sip on both as you go, and then you'll be less dehydrated from the alcohol. Why do you need, why does alcohol dehydrate you? Very simple. When you're processing alcohol in your liver, it goes through alcohol dehydrogenase to get it down to ultimately carbon dioxide and water. So you're dehydrogenating, and in order to do that, you're using hydrogen ions from the water in your body to do that. And so when you break down alcohol, it goes through acetaldehyde, which is very unstable. Your body doesn't like nature doesn't like aldehydes. It's carbon that's joined to another carbon with three bonds. It's unstable. So if there's any hydrogen atoms around, it's going to grab onto those. So where's it going to grab onto? From water. So it dehydrates you. So it goes from aldehyde to a vinegar, basically. So acetic acid to water and carbon dioxide. So in order to make those happen through alcohol dehydrogenase, you need water. So the process of breaking down alcohol, it's water heavy, so you have to drink, and you're going to get dehydrated if you drink alcohol and you don't hydrate as well. So I wanted to remind you about hydration. Very important to do. Make sure that you continue to drink. All right, so now let's talk about some other Thanksgiving themed stuff. Here's some ways to practice gratitude, being grateful for stuff. There might be some hard things going on, depending on what you're feeling about the political situation. Whichever side you're on in terms of the political situation, it's stressful because people are at odds with each other, and you might have had an argument with somebody that you care about. You might be having trouble getting along with people, or trouble understanding why the election went the way it did, or you may be celebrating and not understanding why other people aren't happy about it. And I think it was stressful for everyone, no matter who you are. So practicing gratitude can take you out of feeling bad about whatever happened, or just, you know, feeling at odds with people in your life. So here's some ideas about practicing gratitude. The first is start by observing. Notice the thank yous that you say. How much of a habitual response? Is it hasty? Is it an afterthought? How do you feel when you express thanks in small transactions? Are you uptight? Are you absent-minded about it? And so when you say thank you, really take the time to do it and think about it and be honest about it. I mean, one of the things I try to do, like when I went to the heirloom market in Wethersfield, I had a nice chat with the woman who checked me out. She was absolutely lovely. The man standing next to her was wearing a rainbow sweater. So I complimented him on his sweater, saying how cheery it was, and he thanked me. And then the woman who checked me out was this lovely young woman, and she was wearing a chocolate brown sweater. I said, you know what? I love chocolate brown. And I have several sweaters in that color. It's a great color. We've talked about how it was a great fall color. It's a great choice. It goes with everything. And I told her I like to wear chocolate brown with magenta. Then you have chocolate raspberry. She thought that was a great idea. So I had this great interaction with her and thanked her profusely for getting my stuff. And it was a great interaction. It's a great way to just say thank you. Especially, you know, in a situation like that where I'm going for coffee and a muffin, which is fun, and this young woman is helping me have that experience, so I might as well say a pleasant thank you to her, and if she has a minute, I could chat with her, and everybody's happier for that. All right. Pick an interaction a day. When your instinct to say thanks arises, stop for a moment. Take note. Can you name what you feel grateful for, even beyond the gesture? Then say thank you. Like, really feel it. Don't just say thank you because it's an afterthought. So there's Robert Emmons, who's a psych professor and gratitude researcher at the University of California, Davis, which, by the way, is also one of the greatest places to ride your bike, explains that there's a couple components of practicing gratitude, that you affirm the good things you received and you acknowledge the role that other people play in providing our lives with goodness. So we know it's important to express thanks to the people who help us or acknowledge the things we're grateful for in life. Research shows that gratitude has a wide range of benefits. It literally strengthens your immune system and improves your sleep patterns and helps you to feel optimistic and experience more joy and pleasure and feeling more helpful and generous and helping you to feel less lonely and isolated. So here's some ways to practice daily gratitude. So Jon Kabat-Zinn says, the little things, the little moments, not so little. All right. So say thank you, hold the door. These moments can change the tone of your whole day. And I've noticed that again when I was walking in and out of the heirloom market. People were holding the door for each other. It was very nice. So you can keep a gratitude journal. You can establish a daily practice where you remind yourself of the gifts, grace, benefits, and good things you enjoy. I have several friends who use Facebook, especially in the month of November. Every day they write something they're grateful for. That I'm looking at you, Cousin Sarah, and friend Renee. And so every day they write a gratitude piece on little things that happen to them during the day that are not little, like Jon Kabat-Zinn says. And it's a great thing to do. I haven't done that. That's not something I have done, but I really admire people who have done that. And I appreciate reading other people's professions of gratitude because it makes me think about being grateful about similar stuff. If you write them in a journal, then you can look back at them and say, look how much I have to be grateful for. So you can recall moments of gratitude that's associated with ordinary events, your personal attributes, valued people in your life, and then you can weave this theme of gratitude in your life. Remember bad stuff. To be grateful in your current state, it's helpful to remember the hard times you once experienced. I'm thinking about a year ago, I was still struggling with a lot of Lyme symptoms, and I hadn't started to treat myself in earnest like I have in the last year. And I'm thinking about now how much better I feel. I was getting regular headaches. I was getting tremors every few days. I was feeling more tired over. I still struggle with fatigue, but the fatigue is the last thing that I'm struggling with. I had more intermittent musculoskeletal issues. Now my musculoskeletal issues seem to come and go more. Right now, I'm not getting headaches anymore. I haven't had tremors. Tremors are rare now. The last time I had them was in September, which is great. Maybe soon I'll be able to stop taking all these Lyme herbs. So you remember how hard it was, and I'm very grateful that right now I'm doing a lot better. I've been riding my bike more. In the last month or two, I've been getting on my bike a lot more and really enjoying it because my knee's okay, my back's okay, and my head is okay, and I'm not shaking. It's great. So when I remember how I didn't feel well then and how far I've come, it's a great contrast, and I'm very grateful for that. I'm very grateful for all the practitioners who have helped me, for this guy who supports me, and And all the and my staff who puts up with me giving them a play-by-play of my symptoms, and you for listening to me get the play-by-play. I mean, the reason I like to talk about it on Radio Naturopath is because you're hearing somebody having a personal experience of having a chronic illness, and it's something you can learn from. Because, you know, when I have a chronic illness, it's a weird thing to say, but you benefit because I'm going to go do a deep dive on what's going on with the chronic illness. I'm going to figure out how to treat it. Okay. So you can ask yourself three questions. Meditate on your relationship with parents, friends, siblings, work associates, children, and partners using three questions. What have I received from that person? What have I given to that person? What troubles and difficulties have I caused? And then in Jewish, we say you can then do teshuva. You can turn it. So in Judaism, we have this idea of repentance. But repentance isn't just like, you know, saying you're sorry for your sin. Teshuva literally means to turn around. So you don't just say you're sorry. You do something to fix it and turn the whole situation around. And so that's always a good thing to do. Share your gratitude with others, that when you express gratitude, it can strengthen your relationships. So next time your partner, your friend, your family member does something you appreciate, make sure you tell them, you say something to them like, I appreciate you. I think I appreciate you. It sounds weird because it's a relatively new idiom that people use. I appreciate you. And it's not, people you say, I appreciate what you've done. I appreciate that work you did. But the term is, I appreciate you, which when you think about it, it's a wonderful thing to say. Because when you say, I appreciate you, one can interpret that as, I appreciate the totality of who you are. I appreciate you as a person. That's a really deeply kind thing to say to somebody.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It's just, and it's worn out.
It sounds weird to your ears. I know, but when you think about it, if you actually embrace the term, it's really a beautiful thing to say to somebody. I appreciate you. I appreciate you as a person.
As long as it's sincere.
I appreciate it. Well, that's what we're talking about, that when you say thank you, when you say something appreciative, that you say it sincerely. That's the whole point of this exercise. Come to your senses. You, through your senses, the ability to see, smell, taste, and hear, you gain an appreciation of what it means to be human and what a miracle it is to be alive. Be grateful for the bird feeder. Be grateful for the squirrels who are annoying.
Ugh.
They are cute, but they're a nuisance, but they're still cute. And be grateful for your body and the things that it can do. I know that if you're listening to this, maybe there's something your body is struggling to do, but you can be grateful for the things that your body has given you pleasure-wise. Use visual reminders. The two primary obstacles to gratefulness are forgetfulness and the lack of mindful awareness. When you use visual reminders, it can trigger thoughts of gratitude. Often the best visual reminders are other people. Make a vow to practice gratitude. Research shows that making an oath to perform a behavior increases the likelihood that the action will be executed. Therefore, write your own gratitude vow, which could be as simple as, I vow to count my blessings each day. Post it somewhere where you'll be reminded of it each day. Watch your language. People who are grateful have a linguistic style that uses the language of gifts, givers, blessings, blessed, fortune, fortunate, and abundance. In gratitude, don't focus on how inherently good you are, but rather on the inherently good things that others have done on your behalf. So be grateful for people around you and situations around you that have benefited you. Go through the motions. Make sure, sometimes you have to fake it till you make it, but you have to, if you want to express gratitude, there's things to do. So grateful motions include smiling, saying thank you, writing letters of gratitude. By going through these motions, you'll trigger the emotion of gratitude more often. And also, think outside the box. If you want to make the most of opportunities to flex your gratitude muscles, you have to look creatively for new situations and circumstances where you feel grateful. And share the ways that you've practiced gratitude. All right, so here's some by Elaine Smukler. Here is a 5-minute gratitude meditation. First, you can savor the good. On days when when gratitude feels difficult to find, tune into your senses. Meditate on what you can see, hear, touch, and smell and taste. There doesn't have to be anything special going on. Maybe it's simple as being grateful for your morning coffee or a good book. Use your breath to anchor yourself in the present moment. Our minds are always so easily pulled to busyness, bringing particular attention to feeling the breath or something in your body, or bring your shoulders down, can orient you towards gratitude. Next, bring to mind a sight you are grateful for. You can move through your senses, find something that you appreciate that comes to you from a world of sight. It could be a color, a shadow, a photograph, a painting in your house, a sculpture. And it will never be exactly like that again. When you see it now, can you feel grateful that you can see it, whatever it is? Now, how about a scent that you appreciate? Take the time to tune in with appreciation to an aroma. So what interesting or subtle smell is making you smile? It could be your coffee. It could be an essential oil. It could be your shower gel. It could be your shaving lotion. Something that you're grateful of that ignites gratitude for that smell. Then you tune on to sounds. So the sound could be your white noise. It could be the sound of your partner's voice. It could be the sound of the refrigerator running. It could be the sound of the birds outside or leaves crunching. Maybe play a piece of music that brings you joy. And play music that works for your mood at the moment. So if you want to feel energized, maybe you want to play rock and roll or some fast classical. If you want to feel calmed down, you can play relaxing yoga music or yacht rock or whatever your thing is. Or maybe the sound of children laughing makes you feel good, or the sound of your loved one breathing, or even the beating of your own heart. Touch and texture beckons us. That's one of the reasons I like to have plush animals around. I have too many plush animals. I finally bought one for the office. And it's a small, it's just a little one. It's an owl, and it sits on my desk. Because I have basically three animal totems, if you will. The owl, the bee, and the axolotl. Axolotls just make me smile. They're really cute. And if you don't know what an axolotl is, I recommend that you look them up. Axolotls only live around in the waterways around Mexico City, and they're endangered. They're an amphibian that doesn't develop beyond the tadpole stage. So they continue to swim, and they're really cute. They look like they have a smile on their mouth. And they come in different colors. A lot of them are pink, and they have these flappy wing-like ears that are really cute and frondy. And they wave and help them swim, and they're just very cute. Of course, the owl for the idea of wisdom, and the bee for the idea of community and industriousness. And I got the bee because I was at a powwow when I was in Newfoundland, and I thought that maybe my First Nation name should be Dancing Tree, and the chief, Michael Joe, who's the chief of the Mi'kmaq in Newfoundland, in Newfoundland anyway, he said, "I think more like Dancing Bee," and he left. And there was a wise woman there whose name I don't remember, and she heard him say that, and she very seriously said, "That is a really good totem, because the bee is industrious and community-oriented. It's a very powerful totem." So I'm like, all right, Dancing Bee, that sounds good. So I like bees. They make honey. They make good things that are sweet and good for you and have flavonoids and is nutritious and tastes good. And they are also very community oriented, and they take care of each other. And bees also make really healing stuff. They make propolis, which is a great antimicrobial. It helps to stick the hive together. And they make beeswax, so they stick together. And then beeswax helps to make the hive stick together. It's something to hold the honey, and then beeswax itself is a great thing to use in salves. And the metaphor of the beeswax is that it helps things and entities stick together. So, and it also has antimicrobial benefits as well. So bees are super important. Of course, bees are pollinators. We would not be here without bees, because they're incredible pollinators. So they make sure plants continue to exist on the planet. So they're very important. And so the bee, the axolotl, and the axolotls are rare and precious. But bees are they're incredibly important and industrious and community-oriented, and they make wonderful things. And then the owl, it's about the wisdom. It's the idea that owls are wise. So the next thing you can do is notice other things that you can touch. If there's a pet that you can stroke and cuddle, or some lovely material, like a throw blanket that's really nice and soft, or a plush animal. And then appreciate objects around you. Look around, up, down, from side to side, and appreciate the effort that goes into anything that you use. Maybe care when into the packaging to deliver an item that you received for safety. As you end the practice, carry the attitude of gratitude with you. An attitude of gratitude. One last little grateful tip. Why not offer your thanks to each person who does anything at all for you today, even if it is their job to help you? When you're grateful, when you let your heart open up and fill with appreciation, notice how being grateful makes you feel. And then close with gratitude. I'm so grateful that you tuned into this gratitude practice, and I appreciate your time, effort, and energy, and you should have a beautiful day. So that's your gratitude practice. Okay. Here's some ideas about having peace at the Thanksgiving table, which is kind of important this year. So tips for a peaceful Thanksgiving with family. Let go of situations that aren't in your control. It's a great skill to learn for any of life situations. Take inventory of what you do and don't have control over. You can impact it if you do have some control over it. But if there are other things outside of your realm, just let them go. Worrying about that which you don't have control over won't change the situation. You can surround yourself with positivity, which is infectious. When we're surrounded by people, places, or things that make us feel safe, taken care of, or just plain happy, we're in a better position to feel happy and lighthearted. While reconnecting with family, friends, and yourself this year, make sure to take time to engage in interactions that are positive. Set healthy boundaries. Setting boundaries is often more difficult than it sounds. When we set boundaries, we're stating that our feelings and emotions matter. We want to protect ourselves, even if that makes other people feel uncomfortable. Focus on the positive. One way to achieve that is communicating to others what the focus of the holidays really is, which is loving one another. Gatherings don't have to focus on the negatives that divide us, but can be used as a time to celebrate the positive that connects us to each other. So instead of sitting quietly when the first verbal bomb is dropped at the dinner table, be the one to remind your family that the reason you've gathered together is to spend the day feeling thankful for each other. Get comfortable saying no. It's okay to say no. So again, if you're listening to this the day before Thanksgiving, your calendar may be starting to fill up, or opportunities to hang out with people may be starting to fill up, and maybe you need some downtime. One of the nice things about Thanksgiving weekend, I remember the first year I was in Newfoundland, in Canada, they have Thanksgiving on the second weekend in October, and it's a Monday, and it's not nearly as big a deal as it is in the U.S. When we got to Thanksgiving weekend that first year I was in Newfoundland, which was 1995, there was no Thanksgiving weekend, and I didn't go home. And I found it really, really upsetting and depressing, because I'm used to having that long weekend, and I feel like you kind of need that weekend, because we're trying to continue to be productive at a time when we're losing minutes at either end of the day. The days are getting shorter and colder, and we're pushing ourselves to continue being active. If you're in school, you probably have midterms, or you're getting ready for finals, and it's a very tiring time. And then there's this pressure the holidays are coming. So it's a stressful time of year. So when you get to Thanksgiving weekend, you have all that time off. You really need it. And of course, the tradition is to have a Thanksgiving day. So I said to my parents, never again. I am never doing this again. I'm coming home for Thanksgiving. The rest of the time I'm in Canada, I'm coming home. So for the rest of the time I was in Canada, my birthday present for the year was a plane ticket home. So I never spend Thanksgiving in Canada, American Thanksgiving in Canada again. Nothing against Canadians, okay? Or Canada. Canada's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful country, and I loved living there, and there are things that I love about Canada, and, I have dual citizenship, so I'm very grateful for Canada. But I think if I lived in Canada, I would just, you know, I'd set up Thanksgiving weekend and I'd celebrate it if I wasn't coming home for Thanksgiving. So anyway, so taking that time off. So saying no is very important. And it's okay to feel like you need downtime, you need a holiday, and you're not going to, you can choose pick and choose what you're going to attend. You can focus on your family traditions. Some of the best stories happen when families engage in time-honored traditions, and you can pass those traditions to your younger generations. Limit unnecessary stressors. Stress is an unavoidable part of life, but can be limited or eliminated. It can. I think stress happens, and it's more about you have to figure out how to manage stress. So learning to manage stress is a good thing. And then there's engaging in self-care, not just saying no to things, but then actually doing things that are nice for yourself. Go get a mani-pedi, or a mani or a pedi, whatever you prefer. Make quiet time to pray or meditate. And my thing is doing yin and restorative yoga. At the end of the day, I always look forward to my yin or restorative yoga practice. Soaking in the tub, especially with Epsom salts and lavender, your favorite essential oil. Take a walk, and I'm talking about a gentle walk in nature, not one where you're trying to beat a PR, a personal record. Read a book, and preferably the book is on paper because it's easier on your brain and your eyes. Getting away from screens is a good idea. Dance as if no one is watching, or dance like you don't care if anybody's watching. Or just do nothing. Just hang out and chill. And try to make sure that when you're doing nothing and chill, it doesn't involve screens too much. So, love people where they're at. People are who they are. And if you can appreciate who people are as they are, you're going to be a lot happier. And if you're having if you're in a situation during the holidays where you're just not happy, it's not working, you're just too upset or stressed, you could leave. It's okay to leave. You can leave the area, leave the house where you're at, or the situation where you're at, or you could just go in a different room. You can voice your concerns if the atmosphere is feeling charged. You can agree to disagree with people and tell them you can talk about other topics. But if you just feel too stressed out, you can say, you own it, you say, it's not you, it's me, and you remove yourself from the situation. The holiday season should be a time of rejuvenation and reconnection with family and friends, and it's a good idea to protect yourself and your homes from storms that can so easily come in and disrupt the flow of your life. So you don't have to avoid, hide, and hope the storms pass. Be proactive in reconnecting with people you love and with yourself. So that's a nice way to go. All right, so I'm gonna move on. I want to talk about, I like to talk about honoring First Nation people at Thanksgiving, because First Nation people are the reason we have Thanksgiving in the first place. So honoring First Nation people is important. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit. So here's a talk about decolonizing and honoring Native people on Thanksgiving. One of the things you can do is learn whose lands that you're on. You can find interactive maps. The Native Lands app is an interactive map about your area's Indigenous people. So right here in Mansfield, I think in this part of Connecticut, we're looking at, we have Pequot and we have Mohican and people related to those. And in the Northeast in New England, the people who whose lands we're on are mostly they're of the larger family of Algonquin nations, and the Mi'kmaq who are in northern Maine, they're in Maine, and they're in all of Atlantic Canada. And I interacted with the Mi'kmaq when I was up there. And then the Penobscot are in Maine, and then in Connecticut, like I said, it's mostly Mohegan and Pequot, and down in New Jersey, they have the Lenni Lenape. So learning about who's around and what their traditions are is a good thing to do. Learn your real history. Thanksgiving, like Columbus Day, serves as a reminder of genocide and violence that Native American communities experienced and continue to experience. Learn about Thanksgiving and early Thanksgiving histories. There's different things you can look at. You can look at the Indigenous History of Thanksgiving by Alexis Buntin. You can look at a Wampanoag's perspective on the first Thanksgiving. There's Leonard Peltier's 2019 Thanksgiving message, Walking on Stolen Land, and numerous others. And decolonize your dinner. Native Chefs has created a culinary movement with the goal of getting Indigenous people to honor their ancestors through dietary choices. Bring Native American dishes to the dinner table. So there's ways to do that. Listen to Indigenous voices. It was the Wampanoag people, the people of the first life, that encountered the Pilgrims when they arrived in Turtle Island from Europe in 1620. Since 1863, Thanksgiving has been celebrated as a national holiday in the U.S., mythologizing the violent events that followed European arrival into a story of friendship and mutual sharing. But the reality is the Wampanoag's generosity was also met with genocide, and that truth has been systemically suppressed in U.S. education system, government, and popular culture. You can listen to an interview with Cedric Cromwell, the tribal council chairman of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribal nation. So obviously the Wampanoag, since it was Plymouth, they're in Massachusetts. So you can celebrate Native people. There, for many years, Native people were silenced and their stories were marginalized. That's why it's especially important to read stories about Native characters told in Native voices. And so there's various books. There's My Heart Fills with Happiness by Monique Gray Smith. There's the Fry Bread book. And then there's there's various books here. There's a book, there's a periodical called Cultural Survival that you can look at. You can buy Native this holiday and look for fairs in Native areas that are selling Native goods. And you can look online and find out where they are near you. Share positive representations of Native people. Project 562 and Redworks Photography showcases contemporary Native America and Canada. So Matika Wilbur and Nadja Quatabenz are changing the perceptions of Native and First Nation people. End racist Native mascots in sports. There are still more than 1,000 high school, university, and professional teams that continue to have Native American mascots. Though changes have been made at the high school and college levels, the professional levels, there hasn't been as much change, and you can start that change in your community. And so there's a lot of things you can do to honor Native people. So I thought I'd tell you about some Native American dishes that you can make for the holidays. So here's a few. So there's 18 recipes here. And a lot of them look really good, I must say. So let's see what we got. You can make succotash. So succotash doesn't have to just be lima beans and corn. It can have a lot of, like, this succotash looks super yummy. So this recipe looks like it has corn, zucchini, and lima beans. Traditionally were made with some kind of fried or fresh meat. So this succotash has bacon in it. So bacon makes anything better. So this looks really good. Oh my goodness. So this does have lima beans in it, but also has corn. Mm. Looks like it has peppers and bacon and zucchini. That bacon. Looks yummy.
Bacon and whipped cream make anything good.
Wait, what? Bacon together? And, bacon and whipped
cream? No, they just make anything good.
There you go.
Not necessarily together.
Together. I don't know. If you had a maple bacon cupcake with whipped cream on it, that'd be fine.
That'd be fine.
Maple bacon ice cream with whipped cream on it?
Okay.
All right.
Whatever.
I like maple bacon things. Mm. Then there's Three Sisters, which I've actually made and I enjoy. The only thing is it has onions in it, so I could leave the onions out. But the onion is not one of the sisters. So the Three Sisters is corn, beans, and winter squash. So you can choose your bean. This dish looks like it has black beans in it. So this is so easy to make. And then you can season it how you like. This dish looks like they put other things in it. So there's, you obviously you can do corn. Then you're going to bake a winter squash. And you add the winter squash, and then whatever bean you want to use, and you can make them from scratch or use them from a can, and then you can flavor it any way you like. This one obviously has scallions in it, which looks yummy. And it looks like there's also sunflower seeds on top of it. So you could season it how you like. You could season it in a sweet way where you could throw a little bit of maple syrup on it and cinnamon. Or you could season it in a savory way. You can make it peppery. You could put some cayenne pepper into it. And that would be another Native American tradition, of course, further south. Obviously, you could season it with onions and garlic if you like. I would probably leave out the onions and garlic, although I can do dehydrated and well-cooked. But that's a really healthy dish. You're going to get your... And this one looks like it has some kind of greens in it. So you could do that, too. You could put in some kale or some chard or some bok choy, which isn't technically local, but then you're making it that much healthier by adding the greens. That's the three sisters specifically are the beans, corn, and winter squash. Probably you could use sweet potato too, but the traditional three sisters are the beans, corn, and winter squash. I think I'll make that. That's good. Cedar plank salmon is actually a Native American tradition. And tribes across the Pacific Northwest, they revere salmon as a sacred food, and it's sacred to us too because it has amazing omega-3 fatty acids in it. And if you use cedar plank for grilling it, the Nez Perce did that, the Yakima and the Umatilla tribes, those are very Washington State tribes, and it's super delicious to do. Roasted turnips. Now, that looks like a nice way to make the turnips. I'm not a huge turnip fan, but if you roast them, and you could do radishes and parsnips too, they turn very sweet when you roast them, you can use a thin skin variety like Japanese hakurai, and you just roast them for 15 minutes. You can season them how you like, salt and pepper. You can do a bit of onions and garlic. You can even do cilantro. You can make meatballs out of bison, which is traditional. I probably wouldn't do that because I don't do a lot of beef, but that's something you could do. You can make chayote, which is going to be, that's from Mexican tradition. So chayote is related to a squash. It's very mild and pick up any flavors in your pot. And we could probably get chayote at a market that specializes in, Mexican foods. And of course, if you're going to season it, it's going to have onions and garlic and probably cayenne pepper in it. But however you want to season it, because it's so mild, this is something that could go in a soup, and that's something you could saute or roast on its own. Here's a recipe for chayote with dried green chili. So you make it spicy. And then there's tamales. So tamales, of course, that's a First Nation thing. Again, we're down in Mexico and Guatemala. So corn is a crucial ingredient in Native American cuisine. And tamales, they're fun. It's a group project to make it for anyone who loves to cook. And you can have a tamale party with your friends. And tamales can be sweet or savory. So you could do them either way. So they often will have, they're basically corn husk, and that has some kind of masa flour or corn flour inside, along with meat and seasonings. And you can also make sweet tamales. Wild rice with root vegetables. So wild rice is really nice. So wild rice is not rice. It's actually, so you can make it with regular rice and wild rice. Wild rice is actually not, I'm not sure if it's in the, I don't actually know if it's in the grass family, the Poaceae family. It may not be. Wild rice is a very nice addition to regular rice. And you throw in root vegetables. You could throw in, this one looks like it has purple potatoes or purple sweet potato and other regular sweet potato. And then looks like they threw some raisins in. You could do raisins, you could do dried cranberries, you could do goji berries if you want to. And of course, season it how you like, onions, garlic. This looks lovely. And that's maybe something I get into as well. I like to make wild rice on Thanksgiving. And I don't know why I don't think to do it other times a year, but we probably have some wild rice in the cabinet.
I think we do.
Yeah. Yes. You could make roasted delicata squash. So the thing is, roasting a squash, squashes are very flavorful. And if you want to, you can always throw maple syrup on them. Ron usually does. Or you can make them savory. You just cut up the squash. Well, it's hard to cut the squash when it's still, you have to have a really good knife when it's not baked. But you could throw the squash in the oven. I've done this before. I've thrown the squash in the oven for maybe 20 minutes, pull it out and then cut it, and then roast it the rest, then start cutting it up and doing whatever else I want to do to it. So, you heat it up a little bit so it's easier to cut. And this one, this article says delicata squash doesn't get enough attention. Do we have any delicata squashes?
We do.
We do. Oh boy, we're going to eat delicata squash. That's exciting. Then there's pozole, which I don't even know what that is. It's a sacred dish that's from the Zuni Pueblo people. So this, now we're down in Mexico again. And it's, so it looks like it has, can't tell if that's fish or chicken, but it's about the seasoning and the meats that you put into it. So that's interesting. Whole roasted trout, good old trout, which you can season how you like, again, with onions, lemon, garlic. This one looks like it has rosemary and some nuts on top of it, and lemon, of course. Fried green tomatoes. I didn't realize fried green tomatoes is kind of a Native American thing. I mean, it's made down south. I think it may be kind of a New Orleans thing. Anyway, and then white rice pudding. Rice pudding is sort of a First Nation thing, and Ron loves rice pudding. I've never made rice pudding. Be something I can make, and it's really good. You can put maple syrup in it, you can put vanilla, toasted nuts, you could put jasmine into it. You could bake catfish. I could go on all day. Grilled bone-in bison steaks, roasted butternut squash, fried cornbread. We have some cornbread in the fridge right now that somebody made us. Harvest chicken casserole, which looks like it has Brussels sprouts and rice and wild rice and cranberries and sweet potato. So those are some great things that you could eat. And I have to go because that's all. So if you're listening to this the day before Thanksgiving, I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving with friends and family. We are going to be on our own for Thanksgiving this year, except that we're going to have dessert at our house. And my actual birthday is Thanksgiving. So if you're listening on the 27th, it's my last day of being 60, and I'll be 61 tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.